Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... All right, guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. I know y'all are tired of hearing me say it, but man, it is hot outside. Today, we got Dip McMillan joining us down here on the Mobile Tensaw Delta. Dip, you staying cool out there?
Yeah, man, staying cool today. I've been on a five-day vacation, man. Got to go back to work tomorrow, but I'm enjoying this day off.
Five-day vacation. That's so you took your fourth, and then you decided instead of taking your Wednesday off, you took your Monday off, huh?
Well, the way it came on me this time, I was on call. The first time I've been on call at EMC, so I was on call during the fourth, so I went ahead and took and we already was off on Friday because we offered every other Friday. And this fell off. We was off on Friday, too. So my end of my call was at 4:30 last Thursday. So Friday I was off till today. And I go back to work tomorrow. So I can't complain at all.
No, man, I tell you what, too. I was going to say the fourth is one of those holidays that if you like to run your boat and go fish. Like the 4th of Memorial Day, I don't get out on the water much because there's just so many people out there, so many recreational boaters, and you had, you know, that accident there at Bayou Sarah, you have stuff like that. So if you if you've been off the past 2 days, I know I've been out on my kayak some, and it's a world of difference, the people that I saw out on the water Friday versus the people you see out on the water today.
World of difference.
I know the boat ramp fills up, but then man, after that weekend rolls around, it's a ghost town.
Man, I love it. Man, yesterday was awesome. Only three boats in the parking lot. Man, nobody on the river. Oh, it was awesome.
That's it. No, I'm very grateful that I live up here where I can go whenever I want to. And I stay off the water. 4th of July, Memorial Day. I don't fool with it.
I don't blame you, man. Get a headache, big time.
That's it. I get to have it the other 363 days a year. I guess everybody else can have it for them 2 days. Well, tell me, man, what's been going on? I know I did a little bit of fishing over the weekend. I snuck up into actually French's Lake, and man, it got hot quick, and just seemed like it was a little bit slow back up in there. What have you been doing?
Man, I'm gonna tell you, the crappie bite been on for me and a few of my other guys too that fish to the depth of crappie series. We've been doing a lot of pre-fishing the past couple of days, and I want to say everybody I've been talking to catching a lot of fish, crappie wise. Now it's been unreal, and these fishes on the Mobile, the Tom Bigbee, the Alabama too. These fishes some on structure and some up on the shad. And they are biting because I'm telling you, they bite minnows and jigs. We're using, still using that ATX, Old Smoky. Didn't use the Dippy Special this weekend. Didn't use it. But that Old Smoky and the a white hair jig I've been using from Fishmaster Jigs. Man, I'm telling you, it's been on fire.
One of these days you need to come up here and we'll tie some hair jigs. I got a fly tying vise. You need to come up here and do that. I'd like to tie a few hair jigs up for crappie. I need to put that on my list to do this year.
All right. I got the same advice. I got the thing too, the hair jig set up, and yeah, we'll come tie together.
Yeah, that'd be a good time. That'd be a good time. Well, talking about fishing, so that it's good to hear that the bite has been hot. It doesn't surprise me talking to you that you've been on fish, because it seems like you're always on fish, whether it's hot or whether it's cold outside. But what's your best tips for people, I guess, like me? Like, I always struggle when the temps start to get real hot. Like right now, July, August, like I won't lie, man. Like I'm ready for September, October. What's your best hot weather crappie fishing tips? What's the secret? Dip, for folks like me that struggle during the summertime, what's your best tips for summertime crappie?
Man, I'm going to tell you, using electronics, if you got good electronics, just trusting them. The way I try to target fish in the summertime, I just use my electronics and let it guide me on suspended. I love chasing suspended fish when they get hot right now, because these fish, around our area is feeding on shad, most of them on shad. Now you can hit some structure here and there, and catch a lot of fish on structure. I had a good friend the other day. He found a big treetop on the Bama and loaded with crappie, and went down the river and it was just like then. It was a hit and miss. Some structure had crappie, and some didn't. But me, I just love chasing those big fish on with spider rigging, wide open water, man, feeding on shad. And if you don't have electronic, like I said, just beat the banks on logs, stumps, in 8 to 10 foot of water. And it may not be stacked up, but you'll catch you a good mess of fish. The water temperature now is at 89 degrees, and these fish are eating. They are hungry. They are absolutely hungry. And you can see it from social media, too. I mean, everybody catching fish right now.
Let me ask you this. So you was talking about your buddy. He got on a piece of structure that was loaded and then a piece that didn't have them. If you're out there and you don't have electronics so that you can kind of, you know, see this information on your screen, if you pull up to a piece of structure, how long should you give it, you think, before you move on to the next place?
You need to, you don't have no electronics. You need to make sure you fish at all depth. Let your jig hit the bottom, like the old school method. Just count and see how many seconds. Make sure your jig hit the bottom, and that should let you know how much the depth you're fishing in. And just bounce it at all depths until you find that right depth. Do it from the beginning when it start going in the water all the way to the very end. And if you can't find them, just keep on moving. Usually if you when I used to fish like that, I used to have me two or three corks fishing at various depth from 6 to 10 foot with a cork. And then I get to put a jig on the other side. And if they there, they're gonna hit that live minnow or that jig. And that'll let you know right there, man. It shouldn't take long. I wouldn't stay there over 10 minutes, but it shouldn't take long. If that fish is hungry, and if you're in that area, he's looking up, he's coming to bite that minnow, that jig.
Talking about minnows and jigs, I know right now with it being so hot, like I think the heat index the other day was 109. What's your best tips for keeping minnows alive if you're fishing with live minnows?
Man, I love the angle coolers. I just bought me another one the other day at Miss Botwell Bait and Tackle. She got various sizes up there from, I want to say, 7.5 to all the way to 19 or the 32. I know she got the 19. I like the 13 because if me and another guy fishing up front, I can put that 13 right in the front of us, and it's not it don't get in our way at all. But that cooler is insulated. And when I put me a bottle of water in there, and then it keeps the minnows cool, and it lasts the whole fishing trip, 4 to 5 hours. And if you want to keep rotating them bottle of water, that helps tremendously too, keeping that water temperature cool. But all the main thing is just keeping that water temperature cool for the minnows, because you in and out, you can keep the minnows the whole trip. A couple of days in this heat, and that's saying a lot too, because a regular live well or a regular minnow bucket, it's not going to produce like them ingles. That's my method keeping minnows alive.
It will definitely surprise you, especially if you got some insulation and a good aerator. It surprised me when I started using angles cooler how long you could keep them, but also, like you said, downsizing to a smaller cooler, you can keep more minnows in that little cooler than you think you can. At first, I was scared to put too many in there. But it's kind of hard to put too many in there. Like, you can crowd them if you got a good oxygen supply and you keep them cool. You can stack them up in there and you can fit a lot of minnows in a small cooler.
Absolutely. And on mine, Nick, when you said that about the small cooler, she sells those big stones. I don't use them small stones that come with the aerator. I use those big circle around stones, and that produce a lot more oxygen than the small ones. And that's all I ever have. I mean, it's tremendous how those things work with those big stones.
Now, that's a good tip. I had never thought. I think I'm still rocking the original stone. I'll have to swing by and pick up one of the bigger ones.
That's a game changer for sure.
Well, what's your best tip? I know keeping your bait cool is important. Finding the fish is important. But something that I've been struggling with is just staying cool. And like, I actually just picked up the other day, I got me a pretty good little sunburn on my legs the other day. I was out on the kayak for longer than I thought I was going to be. But then I also picked up I've started picking up some linen shirts to wear because I think they're a little cooler than the polyester ones. And right now, man, I'll take any advantage I can get. What's your best tip for keeping cool out there on the boat?
Man, I'm like you. I like the long sleeve Colombian dry fit shirt. To me, I mean, it keeps me cool. But other than that, like I took my little girl the other day. I have a Millennium umbrella now, and that thing is a game changer. It's absolutely game changer. You can you hook right into my seat pedestal, and I can put it right over us. I can put it wherever that sun is facing. It can tilt. It's unbelievable. But if you don't have a Millennium umbrella, you can go to Walmart and get you a $40, $30 umbrella, and they do the same thing too. It may not tilt and all those other features as a Millennium, but it would definitely keep that sun beaming on you 24/7. It can get it's the heat now is out there, man. It's 9 and 10 o'clock in the morning. It's already over 90 degrees and it's hot. Yesterday morning, one for the umbrella. That guy fished with me. I want to say he was 63 years old. No way he could have handled that heat. But with that umbrella, man, he was able to fish until we got tired of catching fish. And I'll tell you what, that umbrella is a game changer. And I recommend everybody right now in this heat to have something. If it's nothing but a boat canopy over the top of you, just to keep you cool. It's just dangerous heat right now to be out there and just cooking to death in that sun.
It is definitely, like you said, dangerous heat. Heat advisories out there. And yeah, staying in the shade, keeping your sunscreen on, dressing cool. And then we was talking last week with I believe Jason Whitehead up on a lake up on the Tennessee River, and he was mentioning electrolytes, not just drinking straight water, but drinking electrolytes. And that's something. After we got done talking, I went out and I bought a box of electrolyte mix, and that makes a big difference. If you get out there and it gets hot and you start feeling a little bit puny and you get something with a little salt and a little potassium in you, that'll turn your day around real quick.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, tell me, I know we're getting pretty close, aren't we, to the Dippy Outdoors Kids Tournament?
Yeah, we right at a month away now. It's about to get tremendously busy for me. Matter of fact, today I was at Miss Botwell Bait and Tackle, and we've been having so much good, great donation here lately. And I was up there picking up some rod and reel from the like I said on the last one, came from what is, I can't think. I'm throwing a blank. Kane from Kane O'Rear from Mobile Bay Keepers. He they like I said, they sent me a tremendously a donation. I was up at Miss Botwell's today, man. She loaded my truck down with rods and reels. So it's like I said too, if anybody wanted to reach out to DP Outdoors or want to purchase some for the kids term, Miss Botwell is giving 15% off. And that's a big help to the kids tournament. And it's getting unreal now. And we're going to be on Fox 10 News August the 6th around 9:45 to 10 o'clock hour. 9:45 to 10 o'clock a.m. hour. So every day, man, it's something. I got to go pick up something or getting blessed with something. I mean, it's unreal.
Man, that's awesome. I know I've watched that grow over the past couple of years. Super proud of you for doing that. I think that's awesome. I think y'all had well over 100 kids turn out, didn't you?
Yeah, last year we had 133 kids. I think we're going to shatter that this year. I had several today, I had several parents text me, can they come in a kayak? Can they come fish on the bank? So I'm gonna tell you, man, we're probably going to shatter 133 this year.
That's
Unreal.
awesome. That's what it's all about, man. Well, I definitely, speaking for myself, I appreciate what you've done in the community. I know a lot of people feel the same way. That's important to pass the sport on to the next generation. If people want to learn more about that tournament, where's a good place to get some more information?
Yeah, Dippy Outdoors. Dippy Outdoors or Dippy Macmillan on my personal page. And speaking of that tournament too, today I think you just sent it to me a few minutes ago. We're going to have a Dippy Outdoors our first crappie tournament this year on Dippy Outdoors. Going to be at Hubbard's Landing, July the 27th, and all those proceeds go to the 90% of those proceeds go to the kids tournament. So if you want to donate anything or come up there, the weigh-in is going to be at 1 o'clock. If you can't make it to the kids' tournament and still want to be a sponsor or donate, You can meet me up there during the weigh-in, and I can write you down and all that good stuff. But we got a crappie tournament July 27th at Hubbard's Landing. It's gonna be a Dippy Outdoors crappie tournament. And if you want to bring the kids, they fish free just like the kids tournament. And every kid's come on the 27th get a prize as well too.
There we go. It's an awesome opportunity. If y'all are local to the Mobile Tensaw Delta area and got some kids, y'all go check out Dip. Dip, as always, I appreciate you being on the show, sir.
I appreciate you, Nick. Anytime, man.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by. Alrighty, guys, we're back. This time we're tuning in with Lee Pitts. Lee, how you doing today, sir?
Man, I'm doing good. How about you?
Man, I know we've been having some technical issues, but now I think we got them all worked out. I'm doing pretty good. I can feel my blood pressure dropping back down to normal.
Well, I'm right there with you on it. I've just made that move to move up and finally get a new phone. So I know just what you're talking about with the blood pressure.
It's a man. It doesn't take much. I'm not that old, but it seems like I get 10 years older every time I have to start pushing buttons and updating firmware and plugging in adapters. I just feel Father Time coming for me.
I know what you mean. I'd much rather be sitting in front of that boat than having to do some of these issues.
That's it, 100%. Well, man, what's the fishing been like up in your neck of the woods?
You know, like everywhere else, man, it's been hot. I'm talking about, it's just beaming down on us now. I thought that it might have just been me and not in good shape anymore and just kind of, like you said, getting older. But good Lord, it's been warm here with us. It's, you know, we try to get out and still hit it early in the morning, trying to beat that heat. And then again in the afternoons, you know, we'll get out for a little bit. But, whoo, it's been a grind.
Yeah, it's definitely been hot, man. They've had heat advisories down here. And everybody I've been talking to about fishing has just said the same thing. It's hot. Got to make sure you're staying in the shade and drinking your electrolytes and just knowing when it's time to pack it in.
That's when you reach down there and grab a pack of Bobby Garlands and they're kind of starting to get a little sticky laying out in that heat. It's like, okay, it's time to find a shady spot.
I was joking with somebody the other day. I was out paddling in a plastic kayak, and I was telling them it was so hot come the middle of the day, I was worried that the hole was going to start warping. It was just going to start melting on me as I was riding down the river in it.
Just wrap around you.
That's it. Just melt into a puddle and sink me with it. So,
man. We're still catching some fish, though. It's, you know, normally up here in, you know, we're in North Alabama. Most of the Coosa Trail that we fish, you know, your Weiss, Neely Henry, Logan Martin, Lay, it's about the same. You know, our crappie are more of a cold water fish. They like that anywhere from October when it first starts cooling back down till about May. And then they kind of start getting out in that main lake and busting up a little bit. We've targeted them a little on some of the deeper drops, you know, when they first pull out from those docks and start kind of getting back out towards the main lake. They'll hang around those brush tops out there and on some of the drop-offs, and you'll catch some. But mainly what we've been doing here lately, and really I've not had to re-rig or change anything. I'm still long lining, and I keep a couple of rods, you know, up top with maybe some eights or, you know, something even a little heavier to throw at them. We're chasing those white bass in the jumps, and when they start busting, man, I mean, my younger people and even people that don't get to fish a lot, seeing those fish come up and bust and chasing them and throwing at them, and you know, it's the game that you play with them. They like it.
Now, this may be me showing my ignorance, but what's the difference between a white bass and a striped bass?
I could go into really, really long technical scientific explanation of this, but I would just wind up embarrassing myself. A lot of them just had, you can kind of, you know, with your stripe, your white bass, and some of the hybrids, there's different ways you can tell. But if we catch a great old big one, boy, that's a stripe. If we catch those little ones, that's white bass. Now, you can tell the difference, you know, in the striping and some of the broken stripes. And even we have here on Weiss, we got what we call sand bass. You know, they're more of a yellower tint to them. And if they get 3/4 of a pound, that's a big one. It's just they don't get big, but it's something that, hey, when you're out there just having a day on the water, want to have some fun, they're fun to catch.
Sure. Yeah, so it's I guess from what I'm picking up then, it's kind of the difference between
It is, and they'll all wad up together,
I got you.
and you can see when we, when they first put those stripe in here, they were not supposed to reproduce, the big ones, our big stripe. And the last couple of years, especially in the fall, you'll pull up on a place, and you'll have to leave it because you'll catch those. They look like little cigars and about 10 inches long. That those stripe have figured out, I think they're like some of the northern, like your trout and other fish that the eggs have to roll so far. And they've gotten in some of these creeks and some of these little tributaries that the water's moving, and they are starting to reproduce some here. So we're seeing it. I mean, the whole deal was they weren't supposed to, but we're catching little bitty ones.
That's definitely interesting. I guess it's like Jurassic Park, nature finds a way.
It finds a way. Yeah, you're right. It does. It finds a way to do it. But and like I said, we've got an abundance of shad around here. Most of ours is thread fin and has some gizzard shad, but there's so much bait for these fish to feed on. And Weiss being a typical shallow lake, we got a lot of big flats, a lot of when they flooded this lake, a lot of old home places that are still out there with some structure on it. And man, it just gives them a great place to push that bait up shallow and just go to demolishing them. I mean, it's amazing to watch these fish and watch how that they work like cattle dogs. Hey, they'll push them up on a little sand flat and all of a sudden they're in the air.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Lee, I was just talking with Dip McMillan down here on the Mobile Tensaw Delta, and everybody's talking about how hot it is. He had some real good tips about how to keep your bait cool in the summertime, staying cool under an umbrella. I feel like we got a public duty here on the podcast with everybody putting out heat advisories. I feel like we got a public duty to help keep people safe and productive out on the water. What's your best tips for fishing in hot weather?
That's something that a lot of people don't think about, and I'm glad that you brought that up because it's been a struggle for us here lately. A couple of weeks ago, us fishing the ABT North, our final tournament for the year at Lake Gunnersville, and I will say this, ABT, Kay Donaldson, they do a great job of trying to take care of these fish. We've got a 1 pound penalty for a dead fish, and you cannot weigh two. If you have two that go out on you, you're weighing four fish. So they open the registration and the weigh-in, not registration, I'm sorry, they open the weigh-in up at 12:30 that day, and they made a big announcement. Anybody having problems with their fish or fish are looking bad, come on in. Let's don't take a chance and hurting our, we've got to take care of our resources. Let's take care of these fish. And even me and my partner, we weighed in 2.5 hours early. But the thing is, they really went through on keeping your G juice, your rejuvenate, things like that in these live wells. Don't try to cool them too much. But then again, with the anglers ourselves, so many guys they forget about, hey, being out in the elements for that 8, 10 hours. That's a long time to be out there, and it's not only I'm running a Falcon boat, and they have a great live well system, a great cooler system, but I also, hey, I threw my K2 cooler on the back and had it anchored down with plenty of ice in it, not only waters, but your Gatorade, your Powerade, your things with electrolytes. That's something that a lot of people tend to forget about.
It is definitely, I was telling Dip, that's come up several times with several different anglers over the past couple of weeks, is drinking something with some electrolytes in it, man. And that'll make, I know me, that makes a huge difference when I start feeling poorly, if I can get a little electrolytes back in me.
And you can feel it, like I said, a lot of times. And being a ex-ball player, you know when you start, I tell everybody, seeing those fluorescent gnats sparkling around you in your eyesight and things like that, it's time to start putting those fluids back in you and get a little break from that heat. I know with our clothing nowadays, we got so much of the lightweight, breathable, long sleeve and even a bigger hat, wearing these hats that give you some shade, just things like that. But I know we got a lot of lightweight gloves, but every little bit helps. And man, I'm still old school. Hey, I take me a towel and I'll dip it down in some ice water and throw it around my neck just to get that body temperature down a little bit.
It's definitely important. And I like what you were saying too. It's something I tend to forget about a little bit because I don't do a lot of tournament fishing, but I see it every year. We'll have tournaments down here, and if you go to the big popular boat ramp here on the river after a tournament, you will see bass dead washed up against the ramp. And I know, I guess to a certain extent, some of that is just going to happen. Like, you're never going to have a 100% survival rate with your fish, right? But yeah, doing everything that you can, to keep those fish healthy is definitely important, because that's a pretty big impact on a fishery. If you have a big tournament, especially, you get on a watershed and you have tournaments regularly down here, it seems like we have one every week. You definitely want to make sure that those fish are making it back, to do their thing next year and raise the next generation.
Yeah, and I think more people, just as you said then, are starting to be aware of that, not only with tournament directors making some penalties for a fish that is not going to make it, not allowing you to weigh in, but one. In some tournaments, I know they won't even allow you to weigh a dead fish. So that really makes these anglers pay more attention to it and do the precautions and do the things they need to do to protect our resources.
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about. I noticed I was fishing Lake Eufaula last weekend with Steve Graziano, and it got hot there in the later part of the day, and I noticed, we went to turn a fish loose, and he needed a little resuscitation. He'd got whooped
need,
up
need
there
a little
close
extra
to the
bump.
Surface. Oh yeah, he needed. I went to go let him go, and he just floated on his side. I said, "Oh no!" And I kind of got a little water over his gills, and he perked back up. But it's definitely something to keep in mind to try to get them fish in the boat fast and treat them right, like you said. I think that's something. Whether it's your live bait, like Dip was talking to us just a second ago, or whether it's the fish in your live well, you want to keep them cool, but you don't want to really shock them with a big temperature change.
Right,
you don't want to take a minnow out of a cold live well and throw them in 80-something, 90-something degree water in the same thing. You don't want to take that bass out of that water and then, slap them into something that's chilled. You don't want to shock them.
And that's one of the things people don't think about. They say, "Hey, I'm going to keep these minnows cool. They'll be frisky and they'll be lively in that little, my bubbler's going wide open." You hook him and drop him in that hot water, he's dead before he hits the bottom. I mean, you got to think about that. It's that acclimating. I used to have a little convenient food store there in Galesville, Alabama. We were right there at the four-way, downtown Galesville. They still don't have a stoplight there, but they did put up a stop sign. So we're big city right there.
Moving but, up in the world,
we sold, crickets, worms, minnows, things like that. And some of those bait distributors that would come through, they taught me, even in the early spring, I would watch them, that they would put the fresh new minnows that they were bringing to me and ease them down in a bucket in the water and slowly splash the water that was in the minnow vat into it. And he said, "If I just dump them in here, every one of them will be dead in an hour."
Yeah.
And that made me think, hey, they've got to acclimate and get back ready and their body and their, everything that keeps them a flipping and flopping has got to get acclimated to that water they're fixing to be in.
It's definitely something I learned as a kid with aquariums was that, all fish, tropical fish like one temperature, fish from temperate regions like another temperature, but the temperatures are flexible as long as it's done slowly. You can keep tropical fish in a little bit colder water, but you can't take them and change the temperature 10 degrees on them over the course of an hour. You want to ease them into it. If you're going to keep a fish at a certain temperature, it'll surprise you. Like you talk with people who have aquariums, they'll tell you, yeah, you can keep fish in temperatures that would surprise you, but you have to ease them into it over a long period of time. They just don't work the same way we do. We can go from a 70 degree house, walk outside in the wintertime when it's 30 degrees, we'll be all right. Go from 70 degrees to 90 degrees. We may not like it, but we're not going to keel over. But it's definitely different for a cold-blooded animal.
It's funny you were talking about the aquariums at home, and little things you learn as a kid growing up. I learned a pretty valuable lesson too. My mother had a big aquarium with all her beautiful tropical fish in there, and I learned real quick as a child, do not throw a shell cracker in there with them, because they won't be nothing left but that shell cracker in about 3 days.
You know, it is funny that you say that. People talk about, in the aquarium world, they talk about how aggressive oscars are or African cichlids, and I'm with you. You take a good old South Alabama bluegill or a shell cracker or a green sunfish, and dude, it'd be horrible if they ever make it down to the Amazon River. There won't be a fish left in there. I swear they eat a
Oh, it'll put a
piranha.
hurting on them. It'll put a hurting on them. I guarantee you. I had some guys one time, we were fishing, and he caught a big old shell cracker on a little old short rod with about 4 pound test on it. And he said, I'm going to tell you something. These fish right here, if they grow to be 10 pounds, you couldn't go swimming. And I
That's
was like,
definitely
yep,
true.
you're right. They're mean. They'll get on you.
That is the truth, man. Well, Lee, I appreciate having you on the show. If folks want to look at booking a trip with you, where's a good place to look you up?
Man, the best way is just give me a call. That's Lee Pitts at 256-390-4145. And once again, I've just got a new phone and I'm learning how to answer it. So if you think I hung up on you, I didn't. Just call me back. But yeah, I'm still old school. I like to talk to you and I like to talk fishing. So just give me a call.
There we go, guys. If y'all want a trip up there on Lake Wise, y'all definitely go check out Lee. Lee, as always, appreciate you.
Man, hey, thank you, and y'all stay cool.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks. Offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, your metal roofing headquarters. Visit Mississippi. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are lots of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails and recreational sites, 25 parks, and wildlife management areas too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. Alrighty, guys, welcome back to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Today we have a very special guest with us. We're going to be talking with Sarah Stokes, who's the senior attorney at the Southern Environmental Law Center, or the SELC. Sarah leads the SELC's regional stormwater group and litigates cases under the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, the National Historic Preservation Act, the Endangered Species Act, and the Federal Power Act. In 2015, she was named the Cahaba Conservationist of the Year by the Cahaba River Society. And in 2019, she was awarded the Alabama Rivers Alliance River Hero Award. So, kind of a prestigious guest that we have on the show with a lot of accolades. Sarah, glad to have you on the show.
Thanks, Nick. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you were actually, I was just talking earlier this week with Justin Overton, and she said that you were one of her favorite people, and coming from her, that is high praise. So I'm really, really happy to be sitting down with you today here. I don't know about where are you calling in from today?
From Hoover, Alabama.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. I had a manager who worked in Hoover, used to be. He was a mountain biking fool. Y'all got some
Yeah.
really pretty stuff up there.
Yes.
Good deal, good deal. Yeah, it's we're sunny down here. We had some bad thunderstorms yesterday. Have y'all clear up there today?
Yes, it's hot though.
Yes. Yeah, it was the heat index the other day was 105. I
I
was out, oh
can't believe
goodness.
that.
I was out on a little backwater lake doing some stuff, and goodness gracious, there was not a breath of wind coming through the swamp. It was terrible. Well, give us a bit about your background. You've got a bunch of credentials. You've had a good career. What kind of first got you started in environmental law?
Well, my dad would take me camping We grew up in Birmingham, and so we would go to the Cajada Wilderness in Georgia, and he was a big trout fisherman, and he loved to go to those cold waters up north in at the North Georgia. And so we go camping a lot, and then my mom would also take the family to church a lot. And she, there we would learn lessons about justice and about, care of creation and about fighting bullies and fighting greed. And I think the combination of those lessons that I learned outside with my dad and, going to church with mom just kind of combined. And I am an environmental attorney that represents nonprofit organizations like Coosa River Keeper, Justin's group, and Black Warrior River Keeper, Cahaba River Society, Mobile Bay Keeper, Choctahatchee River Keeper, Cahaba River Keeper, et cetera. And those organizations, what they do is they monitor the rivers and they, try to talk to the polluters on these rivers to try to get them to stop. But then when it gets to a point where they can't get the polluter to stop, they would bring the evidence to us at the Southern Environmental Law Center, and we would help them try to stop that polluter from violating the law, whether that's in the court or whether that's in the legislature or whether that's through an agency. SCLC is really fortunate to have amazing donors, so we don't have to charge any of these nonprofit groups for our services. So I'm able to be an environmental advocate on the good side. I don't have to charge for my services. It's a dream job, and I'm really blessed to be able to do what I do.
Yeah, that's awesome, and that's a common story I have heard from a lot of the players in conservation here in the state, is that it all started tagging along with mom and dad. You talk about the Cahuta Wilderness region, so I haven't really spent that much time in there, but I've come through that area on the way back from like North Carolina and playing around in the Smokies, and I want to go back. I want to kind of do a deep dive into that area. Talk about trout fishing. That is something I started fly fishing last year, and I haven't gone cold water fishing yet. I'm dying to go do some native brook trout fishing. I just ordered a one weight fly rod that I've got coming in. So it sounds like I would love to hang out with your dad some. What is that? Is that your favorite natural place? Is Cahuta Wilderness, or what's your favorite time places to spend time in now?
I love Little River Canyon. Again, it's in Alabama, but it's a beautiful canyon. It's the biggest canyon east of the Mississippi, and it's a good fishing hole, but it's a great little hike. And I like to take my family down there. I have two boys, and we just splash in the waters there. It's cool. I'm looking for cool places. If you notice, I'm thinking about Cabana, and I'm thinking about Little River Canyon now that we're in 100-degree weather.
Hey, I'm the same way in Little River Canyon. I know we've had Jack West on before at Alabama Rivers Alliance, and he's from up in that area. And that's where me and my wife spent our honeymoon. And we go there a lot. There for a little bit, we went every year for our anniversary, and it's beautiful. Love going up there in the fall. We got married in the fall. And then life just kind of got in the way and we stopped. And then last year, we actually went back and I got to take our daughter, who was born last year, and got to take her and do a little bit of really minor backpacking down into Little River Canyon. Kind of walk her. I don't think we went a half mile down the trail. We didn't want to get that far back there, but I have pictures of her loaded up into a backpack, riding along wearing a little teeny tiny 6-month-old flannel shirt, and we hiked in and did some fly fishing, and yeah, it's beautiful. And this time of the year, I would kill to be closer to it and be able to do a little bit of that wet wading in the summertime for sure. I love going up there and catching the green sunfish and the coosa bass that they have in there. It's a really cool region to me. Like, you get up into North Alabama and you've got salamanders and you've got scorpions and you've got all those cool critters that we don't have down here. It's such a different world. I'm sitting here on the edge of thousands of acres of river swamp. This morning I was with Justin out in kind of a coastal marsh estuary area. And it's just something I'm always glad to see, how much diversity we have. I'm actually reading through. Have you ever read Southern Wonder?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm working my way. That's been on my reading list for years now. And I'm reading it and reading. I'm getting to the part now where it talks about all the geological formations, the Appalachian Highland region, and like the Selma chalk line and everything like that. So it's cool state to be in, and it's an important part of the world, I think, to be doing the type of work that you're doing.
Yeah, you brought up that it's a cool state to be in, and I am really proud to work in Alabama because I think you know, and your listeners probably know, but that we rank number one in freshwater biodiversity, which means we have more critters in our state than anywhere else in the entire country, which is an incredible statistic. Most people don't think about that when they think about Alabama. They don't think, oh, they have, it's, you know, like a That's why they call it, you know, America's Amazon, but it's all over the state. And to be in this state to protect that biodiversity is a blessing, and it's something that it's just it's a really we're in a fortunate place to be able to be with all this life here. We have more species of turtles than anywhere else in the world in Alabama.
Yeah, I'm not up on my turtles. I was actually just talking the other day with Jason Thornberry with the Nature Conservancy, and I was asking him. I'm like, "You a turtle guy? I'm like, can you teach me? Can you help me out? Because I see a bunch of them here on the river." He said, "No, you're gonna have to get with Jimmy Stiles." I don't
Right.
know if you're familiar, but he was like, "That's the man." He said, "If you want to know more than you knew there was to know about turtles, you need to get with him." But yeah, it's crazy. The turtles, the fish. There's so much stuff, and like you said, that's not top of mind, I think, still when most people in the country think Alabama. You know, there's, I think we're known for SCLC football and the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
And it would be great in my book if we could get known more for the fact that we have, like you said, we have so many different species, and to me, it's criminal that the Cahaba isn't up there in kind of national consciousness with, you know, the Snake River or the Colorado River or something like that, right? You talk about your dad being a fly fisherman and fishing for trout, and like out west, you have these rivers that are legendary among fishermen. You know, people put it on their life list to go fish these rivers, like the Yellowstone River, and it's like we have way more rivers than they have with way more species in them. You know, like you have rivers out there, it's like, well, y'all don't have, you know, a dozen species of fish, and we have hundreds. Like,
Right.
I hope that we can change that. Like, I really enjoyed the book. I know that E.O. Wilson did a lot of good work, getting people to think about that more, the ecological diversity here. It really is a wonderland, and you get used to it when you live in it every day. I think a lot of people don't see it because you're so immersed in it. But I know I've traveled and been out west, and when I came back home and you started getting back into the southeast, you're like, wow, there's a lot of plants here.
So green.
Yeah, it's so green, and there's so many different things. Like, I've gone in my backyard, and it's nothing to sit there and catalog 100 different species of plants. You know, if you sit there and you start trying to ID every little weed that's growing up in your sidewalk and everything. I got a little bit of land here in the back on the river, and crazy levels of biodiversity. So, and then I know getting into kind of your wheelhouse, you know, that's we also, a statistic that's not as fun to talk about is we also, you know, lead in extinctions. That's something that I've read a lot. Southern Wonder talks about that. So tell me some about the work, some of the recent and ongoing work that y'all are doing here in the state.
Yeah, we do lead in extinctions, and that is unfortunate. We are trying to help with some of the river impairments that we have in our state. So ADEM is Alabama Department of Environmental Management. They classify each river system, or as many as they can, based on whether that river system meets its designated use. So if a river is used for drinking water, the quality of that water has to have certain components that meet drinking water standards. And unfortunately, Alabama has over 5,000 miles of rivers that are impaired, that don't meet their designated use. Of course, we have 132,000 miles of rivers, but 5,000 of those are impaired, and the biggest reasons that they're impaired are for E. coli, sediment, and mercury. And E. coli is a problem because there's several cities and municipalities don't have the money or the willpower to upgrade their infrastructure, their sewage infrastructure, and so that sewage leaks into rivers, or septic system leaks into rivers, or it could be just animal livestock leaking into rivers because there's not Those farmers don't put in the sufficient infrastructure needed to keep the waste away from the rivers. And so based on that, we have had several cases over the years. I've been working at SCLC for 14 years, and we've had several cases over the years trying to keep E. coli, basically poop, out of our rivers. And we worked with one case with Coosa Riverkeeper against Oxford to try to keep their E. coli out of the Chockalaka Creek. We have right now a case against the city of Tuscaloosa because they a lot of their pipes are leaking sewage into the Black Warrior River and the Hurricane Creek there. In fact, they have sewage spills that are three times what the average city has. And the city of Tuscaloosa can afford to do better. They know to do better. So we are pushing them in court to do better and to get those numbers down so that septic and sewage is not leaking into onto our streets and onto the creeks around Tuscaloosa, because people use those creeks. A lot of people swim at Hurricane Creek Park and fish in the Black Warrior River right there. So that's one case that we have or that is current right now. Another reason that our rivers are impaired are, like I said, due to sediment. And that is when you've got a bunch of sediment from a construction site or from agriculture or from really the volume of water that's coming from these impervious surfaces or impervious surfaces from a city. The volume of water comes in and scours the banks and causes a ton of sediment in the rivers. And as you know, and your listeners know, when you have a really muddy river, fish can't find your bait. They can't find food. They can't find another mate to reproduce. So really muddy water is not a great habitat for fish and for other aquatic organisms like mussels in a river. And so we have been working and sometimes having to bring suit against big construction operators that don't use appropriate best management practices and don't follow the law when they build a big development. You're supposed to put in certain silt fences and supposed to make sure that that sediment is not reaching your creek. But sometimes, developers want to get it done quickly and they want to do it as cheap as possible and don't necessarily care about what's going on in the river. Or it's definitely not their, it may not be their first priority. So we've had to bring some suits against developers to keep the sediment out. And the third reason that rivers are impaired is mercury. And mercury is caused by coal-fired power plant. And the majority, we have actually two suits against Alabama Power right now. Mercury is caused by, like I said, coal-fired power plants. What happens is that mercury is released into the air and then falls into the rivers. And the fish eat that mercury in the form of the mercury comes into the river and into the plankton. The fish eat the plankton, and then smaller fish eat the bigger fish, and the mercury bioaccumulates or exponentially gets greater and greater in the fish tissue. And so we there have been so and that's a big reason why our rivers are impaired, and it's one of the leading causes of why the Department of Health and the Alabama Department of Environmental Management have to put out fish consumption advisories to telling people they should not eat the fish in certain areas of the river is due to mercury. So there are ways to curb that, trying to get Alabama Power to use solar and trying to incentivize people to use solar. So we have a case against Alabama Power right now because of the fact that Alabama Power charges one of the largest fees for solar users. So we're trying to curb away at the impairments that are occurring on the Alabama waterways, trying to make precedent in those cases. And make examples so that our waterways become places where fish and wildlife and people can use to swim and to drink that water.
It's definitely everything that you bring up there, kind of in broad strokes, talking about like mercury and fish consumption advisories, talking about sediment, talking about E. coli. As you talk about that, like that all has impacted me personally. I grew up down in Lake Forest, And I'm sure you're familiar with the history of it, like some of the attention that was drawn to that subdivision in the 70s and 80s and the sediment runoff issues that there were. Anybody listening in that's ever read, Sarah was talking about America's Amazon, like Ben Rhines wrote the book Saving America's Amazon. And, there's a picture in the book of Doleev Bay with all that sediment washing out of Doleev Creek from Lake Forest. And I grew up in that neighborhood. I watched that silt in years after the fact. It was continuing to silt in. I've watched Doleev Bay get shallower and shallower and shallower, and where you used to get access and fish, you really can't get up in it anymore. Same thing, like there would be sewage runoff in the creek that I played in as a kid. I think Baykeepers back in 2017 brought a lawsuit against Daphne Sewage for sewage overflows in the creek that I fished in and played in as a kid. Mercury consumption, coal ash issues that reared its head up, last year when my wife and I found out that we were pregnant. We were looking, making sure, changing her diet, trying to do what was best for our baby, and being like, okay, well, I guess we're gonna, lay off on the canned tuna and the salmon and stuff like that. And it was like, well, what about catfish? And I was like, that's a good question. I've never looked into it. And you read up on it and you're like, oh, yeah, okay. Well, I guess we need to avoid that too. So, this the stuff that you're talking about, it's I feel like it's really relevant to the anglers here. Like that has a direct effect on your quality of life. It's not some big pie in the sky issue. It's not some global issue. It's not something happening on the other side of the world. And that's relevant. It's all stuff that's happening right here in your backyard, in your hometown, throughout the state. So it's really pertinent. Again, I'm really glad that we've got folks like you working to help address some of those issues.
Yeah, well, the catfish question is interesting because doesn't it depend on where you get your catfish and, whether your wife should eat, I don't know, whether your wife should eat a certain fish from a certain creek because she's pregnant or she was pregnant, really depends on the creek and the river that you get the fish from. And that information for, Coosa River Keeper and Alabama Rivers Alliance and Mobile Bay Keeper are all working to make that information much more readily available. And I know you've talked about this on your shows in the past, but that's why they were pushing and are still going to push for the Shore Act, because that act would require the state to put up signs at boat ramps if there was a fish consumption advisory, and that sign would basically say, "Don't eat the fish here because of mercury contamination," or it would say, "You can only eat bass once a month because of the, the mercury in the creek." So just those signs, I think, would make things much more, the information much more apparent and much more readily available, so that you wouldn't have to search and go on the internet and find, okay, this particular mile of, Fly Creek, can I eat the fish there? Whereas, if there was a sign where you put your boat in, you could easily determine whether or not you could eat the fish there. And so that's what the Shore Act is about and was about. And that's why I think it's great that you were putting that on your show, so that listeners know that it's a very simple legislative act that could give people a lot of information that they may need in order to determine whether they can eat the fish that night.
Yeah, Sarah, talking about the Shore Act, that's something that has been really eye-opening for me. It's frustrating to have to the current process. Like we stayed up at Lake Martin, me and a buddy, we were trying to read on fish consumption advisories, and it took two of us, like a half hour of pulling up this document and looking before we found out that while there wasn't an advisory for Lake Martin per se, there was one for Elkahatchie Creek, which dumped out right there where we were staying by the place we were renting. So I'm definitely rooting for the Shore Act. I know the past 2 years that's got shot down, which is odd to me, but I'm hoping that in the future, hoping that we can make that a possibility. I think a sign at a boat ramp would be great. And we do have a few, just in the Coosa River Keepers, they've done a really good job just of their own initiative, getting that information out there and making it more accessible. We were actually just at a boat ramp yesterday over in McIntosh, and I saw one of their, I think it's a Coosa River Keeper sign, but I think Mobile Bay Keeper had actually put that one out. So it was some good collaboration to get that information out there. But I've been to a bunch of boat ramps that didn't have the sign, so I definitely think it's a piece of legislation that should be passed.
Absolutely.
Well, Sarah, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. Appreciate everything that you do here in the state of Alabama. Appreciate everything that the team over at SELC does. For our listeners who want to get involved or learn more about what y'all are doing throughout the Southeast, where can they find some more information?
You could go to southernenvironment.org, and we are in six different southern states. But if you wanted to just know about Alabama, we have a page for Alabama clicking through southernenvironment.org.
Yep. Yeah, y'all have a really well-organized website. I find myself scrolling on there frequently, getting some environmental news. Everything from Red Wolf reintroduction to migratory animal bills to some of the coal ash issues, protect the Okefenokees, good stuff on there. Anybody who likes to get outside and play, whether it's up there where it's cool in Little River Canyon or up in North Georgia or down here in the Mucky Swamp where I'm at, definitely y'all take a chance to look at that. Sarah, again, I appreciate having you on the show today.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for having the show.
Absolutely. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Bucks Island is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, that's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list, and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Killer Dock. Killer Dock combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more. Also by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@sepond.com. Also brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com. Also by L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoons to bigger bay and hybrid boats for the hardcore angler. You can visit them at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama, or give them a call at 251-937-1380.